Ohio is blessed with a great highway system. Building it and keeping it maintained requires pouring concrete and laying asphalt, but we're not too far away from when improving these roads will include laying digital cable and placing electronic sensors. The Ohio Department of Transportation is embarking on what they call a smart mobility initiative, gearing up for the driverless cars and all those other Jetsons gizmos we're hearing about. Today, we talk about the next generation of highway infrastructure on Town Hall, Ohio.
This is Town Hall, Ohio, home to interesting people, engaging issues, and enlightening stories. Town Hall, Ohio is a production of the Ohio Farm Bureau Federation, working to forge a partnership between farmers and consumers, and is supported by Nationwide. Nationwide is on your side. Now, here's Town Hall, Ohio host, Joe Corneli.
In a recent op-ed in the Plain Dealer, Ohio Department of Transportation Director Jerry Ray said, and I'm quoting here, industry experts predict that within a decade, your car will be able to navigate the interstate system without you needing to touch the wheel. Wow. Well, there's no shortage of attention being paid to driverless cars, but what we don't hear as much about is building the road system that will accommodate them. Joining us today to talk about the concept of smart mobility is Jim Barna. He is chief engineer for the Ohio Department of Transportation. And Matt Bruning is, I was going to say public information officer. Is that right,
Matt? That's fine. Press secretary is the official title, but either will do.
And a former radio guy from our flagship station, WTVN.
Yeah.
Welcome back to the microphone.
Well, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be back here and a nice studio you have here.
Well, thank you very much. We'll tell the boss you like it. Jim, welcome to the show. Glad you could join us. Before we talk about our main purpose for being here today, and that's this smart mobility concept, Jim, tell us a little bit about the mission, purpose of the Ohio Department of Transportation.
Well, the mission is pretty simple. It's to provide the easy movement of people and goods from place to place. We keep it that simple, and we take that to heart.
Talk a little bit about, Matt, the structure of the department, because I know you've got folks located. You're not just here in Columbus.
Right. We've got 12 districts around the state. We've got our central office here in Columbus, and all of those work together to support the mission that Jim talked about. Because all of us believe in that. So we're all working towards that one common goal of getting people and goods from place to place as easily and efficiently as we can.
So when I think of ODOT, Jim, I think of the big yellow dump truck along the side of the road and the snow plows. But in terms of transportation and what your agency has some interest in, purview over, it's not just highway transportation, correct?
Correct. It's highway transportation. It's also public transportation. We look at maritime. We also work closely with the Ohio Rail Development Commission. So it's basically supporting all our modes, including bicycles and pedestrians as well.
So, Matt, give me an idea of some of the kind of things you might do in terms of working with the maritime industries or airports or the railroads.
Absolutely. A lot of it is just how do we connect those different modes of transportation. For example, when it comes to maritime, you know, we don't necessarily have oversight of the port, but we work with the port to figure out how can we get the items that come off that boat to wherever they need to go in the state of Ohio. So we'll work closely with them to develop a road network around that. So it's working in collaboration with a lot of different partners all over the state, and that's really how we make our transportation system work.
So, Jim, you mentioned the oversimplification is make it easy to move people and things around. Talk about the advantage that the transportation infrastructure in Ohio provides to our state in terms of being able to do commerce, being competitive with Indiana, Pennsylvania, Michigan, Kentucky, and being competitive with the Chinese and the Europeans.
Well, Joe, it's truly a global economy, and Ohio plays a very important role in that. If you look at the state of Ohio, we're within one day travel of 60% of the North American population. We are fourth largest interstate system in the country. We have the second largest amount of bridges in the country. The fourth largest rail system in the country. I'm going to keep quoting these things.
Please
off.
Do.
eighth largest maritime tonnage moved in this state in the country as well. So we're very vital to freight. A lot of the manufacturing is here in the Midwest. Ohio ranks third in manufacturing in the country. So it's very important for us to have a transportation system, a healthy transportation system, for us to move that type of freight across the state.
And as we talk about globalization, does that become even more important? You know, folks don't typically think of the fact that we've got access to the Gulf and the ocean on either end of the state.
That's true. We have two major waterways. One would be the Lake Erie and, of course, the Ohio River. Those are two major national maritime roadways.
So, Matt, as you get out and about and talk, one part of what you do is is work with the media. Do you think there's a general awareness that this is a pretty sizable benefit to the state of Ohio?
I think so. I mean, I think people are starting to realize really, you know, what role we have to play in transportation, and our location is key. I mean, especially when we talk about the smart mobility that you led off the show with. I mean, you know, it's easy for companies to test that technology in California where it's sunny and 78 every day, or in Arizona where there's, you know, rarely ever any rain. But you'd want to bring that technology here to Ohio because our location, not only in proximity to other areas, but also the fact that we get all four seasons, sometimes within a week.
Sometimes overnight anymore.
Right. Or even our geographical locations. I mean, you look at our US 33 Smart Mobility Corridor, you know, you can go from urbanized Columbus to suburban Dublin to rural Union County within that 35-mile stretch pretty quickly. So we really, Ohio is really, as we used to say, the heart of it all. When it comes to transportation, we think it's no different.
And of course, I'll throw a plug in here. This is important for the typical manufacturing types of industries that we think about, but it's extremely important for Ohio's farmers too, because a lot of what we move around the state, Jim, agricultural commodities.
And a lot of that now, more so now, we're shipping a lot of agricultural commodities out of the country. That's via our transportation network to rail, as Matt mentioned. Our modes all interface with one another, so we have multimodal or what I would say hubs within Northwest Ohio here in Central Ohio. So, you know, it traverses the county roads to the state roads, from truck to rail, from rail to ship, and across the sea. So, yeah, we are delivering agricultural products across the globe.
Just one more point before we get to why we're really here, folks outside of Central Ohio probably don't see it in the newspaper or hear it on the radio or see it on TV as much, but we've got a transportation hub in Rickenbacker Air Force Base here that it just seems to be growing by leaps and bounds. I mean, they're putting up storage buildings and warehouses and shipping facilities. Jim, just tell folks a little bit about Rickenbacker. It's a former Air Force base, right?
True. Actually, I was born there, Joe,
and no
it was
kidding.
Lockbourne Air Force Base.
Okay.
It was some time ago, though. But yes, it is a truly multimodal hub. It's an air hub. There's a big rail network there at Rickenbacker, as well as a highway network. So we're able to bring in air freight, transfer that from either to truck or to rail to move to different distribution locations throughout the state, throughout the country, as well as moving from rail to highway. Just recently, we're part of highway improvements to connect Rickenbacker to our highway network. So, yes, it has grown. It continues to grow. It's a major multimodal hub here in the state of Ohio. It's one of two. We have one up in North Baltimore, Ohio, and we have the big one here at Rickenbacker.
So, Matt, if I'm, a 17 or 18-year-old kid getting ready to get out of high school, and I'm not sure if I want to, you know, go on and become a rocket scientist or find a trade, I would think that transportation, logistics, all of these things we're talking about probably would be a growth industry in terms of employment in Ohio.
Absolutely. And when you look at it, I believe the stat, and I don't have it memorized, but we're looking at truck traffic to increase in the state of Ohio by, I believe it's like 67% over the next just couple of years. And you think about that, you're right. The logistics field is a great field to get into. And again, the sky's the limit. We all still use products, and a lot of those products we're buying online, and those have to get shipped to our house somehow, and that's coming over the road.
We are talking about transportation issues in Ohio with a couple of gentlemen from the Ohio Department of Transportation. Jim Barna is chief engineer, and Matt Bruning is the press secretary for ODOT. At the top of the show, I threw out a term there that I hadn't really heard before, smart mobility. Jim, give us a definition of what that is.
Well, smart mobility is about, it's basically looking at technology to enhance the movement of people or goods across the state. So basically, specifically, we're talking about connected vehicles, autonomous vehicles, intelligent infrastructure. That could be smart signals. That could be sensors. That could be dynamic messaging. That could be phone applications where we get real-time information to our drivers out there on the highways.
So you threw two terms out there. We're just going to kind of treat this as the entry-level course in all of this. Connected vehicles and autonomous vehicles.
Start with autonomous vehicle. An autonomous vehicle is, I think you mentioned maybe at the top of the show, is a car that basically can drive itself. What a car will do, it will read the pavement markings on the road. It may have a GPS unit that takes coordinates from, you know, whether that's Google Maps or something like that. And it may have what we call a LIDAR system on board. And that's basically laser detection around the vehicle to where it can detect objects and make whatever necessary adjustments to that vehicle to avoid those objects. So that basically, a car can drive from point A to point B by itself without anything but those systems I talked about on board.
Then the connected vehicle.
Now, what a connected vehicle does, it takes information, it may generate information from the vehicle's onboard systems and transmit that information to other cars, or may even transfer that information to the infrastructure, and vice versa. So let's say a car is traversing US 33, one of our proposed smart corridors, and hits a black ice patch. And that car's anti-skid system engages itself. Well, that system will transmit that information, or the onboard computer will transmit that information via the infrastructure or fiber optics or cellular connections to vehicles maybe 20 miles back to warn them of maybe a potential black ice patch in the road. It will also transmit that information to our roadside sensors to where we can pick it up in our traffic operations centers and dispatch the necessary de-icing equipment. All instantaneously.
Now, this is, as I called it, Jetson's stuff, Matt. I think I know the answer, but I'll let you get into this. Why do we want to do this?
Well, you know, one stat that jumps out at me, and I had never heard this stat until we started talking about smart mobility. 94% of all crashes in the state of Ohio start with human error. So if you think about that, this could be a game changer for safety. You know, if you take that human element out, whether it be fully through autonomous vehicles or even through connected vehicles where it's a driver assist, we really think this could be a game changer for safety. And so that's one of the big reasons. And I think often that gets overlooked as we talk about all the whiz-bang of it and say, well, this is really cool. But the, you know, there's the economics, there's all of that, but there's also the safety. And of course, that's one of the top priorities for
and
us.
And Joe, if I may add, you know, last year we had over 1,100 fatalities mm-hmm. in the state of Ohio. That was a 2% increase over 2015, which was the most single year increase that we've had in the state in 50 years. So it's really something we're concerned about, and we think this type of technology will be game-changing and changing those numbers around.
So that's a pretty good answer to why do we want to do this.
Right, absolutely.
More on smart mobility when we continue on Town Hall Ohio. Topic today, the roads of Ohio, and more particular, what those roads might look like in the not too distant future. Smart mobility is our theme, and we're chatting with Jim Barna and Matt Bruning of the Ohio Department of Transportation. Jim did a great job of explaining what some of the technology looks like. Matt, I asked you why we did it, and you had a great answer. Safety is a primary driver. What about the economics, though? If we have these cars that are autonomous or semis or they're connected vehicles, what's that do on the economic side of things?
Well, I mean, obviously this is an emerging industry, so if we can make Ohio the epicenter of that, which we think we are doing, that technology will just emerge from here. I mean, you think of the Silicon Valley in California when it comes to technology. this could very well help Ohio become the Silicon Valley of autonomous and connected vehicles.
Jim, I'm kind of leaning on you to be my tech guy here. You talked to us about the vehicles and the technology within those. What about, you listed them. Give us a little bit clearer picture of what kinds of technology that the surface, the roads are going to have in place if we want autonomous or connected vehicles to do what we want them to do.
Well, you know, the first thing it starts with, and it's pretty basic, is the striping. You know, the roads themselves, we have to make sure that that striping is of the utmost quality, because a lot of the autonomous vehicles read the striping for you to be able to stay within that lane. Second of all is to promote the communication between the infrastructure and the vehicles, and that's where we look at outfitting the corridor or some of the technology we're talking about. So a lot of that may be fiber optic lines. Specifically, US 33 will have 35 miles of fiber from Dublin all the way up to East Liberty.
Buried
fiber. And with that, connected to that fiber, what we call roadside units. Those are basically the receiver transmitters that will transmit information to and from the vehicles. And a lot of the vehicles, and a lot of this is coming off manufacturing, we will do some piloting of our own state vehicles to test the technology, and those are called onboard units. So we will do some aftermarket deployment of these transmitters that will transmit information, let's say, from the ODOT fleet to the infrastructure and vice versa. And that's what we'll use to test it. But ultimately, the car manufacturers will be having this technology built within the vehicles themselves.
So the striping that you mentioned, it's not just going to read the normal paint that you paint the dividing lines on the highway, is it? Or
it's that simple. Okay, I mean, a lot of it's video recognition software within the vehicle. Some of it's GPS. So, you know, as you're traveling down the road, you can see yourself on a Google map. It will have that system in addition to the striping. But basically, the lane departure technology is based upon the vehicle reading the striping outside on the pavement.
So, Matt, I'm an old school guy in just about everything. A friend of mine let me get behind the wheel. He had a Cadillac SUV, asked me to drive. So I'm behind it, and I'm getting ready to change lanes, and I didn't turn on my turn signal. And the steering wheel, started shaking violently. I was creeping up on the back end of a car in front of me while using the cruise control. My speed started coming down automatically. I get it. There's safety things here. I didn't like it. How much of the battle will be to get people to come to terms with the new gee whiz stuff?
I think you're onto something, because even AAA put out a news release just this week that talked about how the majority of people don't like autonomous and connected vehicles. And I think, honestly, as I talk to people around the state, the reason they don't is because they don't understand how it works. And then when I throw that 94% of all crashes start with human error at them, they say, "Ooh, well, that's interesting. So it's going to help me be safer." I said, absolutely. For example, we took a truck from Otto, which is a subsidiary of Uber, that took a load. It was a trailer from our central garage in Columbus, and took it up US 33 to Logan County. And the driver was sitting there in the driver's seat, but he didn't have his hands on the wheel or feet on the pedals. He flipped the switch, and basically the truck drove itself. And it did all those things you're talking about. As he would come up on somebody, it would slow down. So it was a safety issue. If he had tried to you know, change lanes with a car there, it would have, you know, given him a warning saying, "No, don't do that." So it's sort of like autopilot with an airliner. You know, it's helping with your driver assist, but you're right. I think a lot of it's going to be overcoming that mentality that I have to think for this thing, and really you don't, and that's what makes it safer.
Matt Bruning and Jim Barner with the Ohio Department of Transportation. So I'll give you another analogous situation, Jim, and let you respond to. I'm a PC user. My wife is a Mac user. I try to help her when she asks for some help, but I'm lost. It seems to me that one of the stumbling blocks could be that ODOT has standards here, and Uber has standards there, and Ford, Chevy, and Chrysler have standards. How do we get all of the players in this massive space working together on the same page?
That's a very good question. And, you know, that's something that's been presented before. And NHTSA is actually the overarching federal agency that would establish these or this criteria as it relates to data format and what you need to transmit in. So NHTSA is the National Highway Transportation Safety Administration. They will issue specifications on, you know, frequencies to the automotive manufacturer. So everybody is consistent. There is a band that's reserved for connected vehicle transmission. It's the 5.9 gigahertz spectrum. So there's already an established reserve band for that. So NHTSA will establish standard criteria for the automakers, and then there's reserve bandwidth. So it all should be standardized at some point.
We'll talk more about smart mobility right after this. Welcome back as we're talking about transportation in the future with Jim Barna, Chief Engineer with the Ohio Department of Transportation. Matt Bruning is the press officer for that same state agency. We were talking about some of the technology that will go into the vehicles and to the infrastructure. Jim, you made the point there while we were during the commercial break that one of the big challenges, while it's a challenge to make sure everybody's working with the same standards, one of the challenges is making sure that data stays protected. Talk more about that.
Yes. With all this information between vehicles talking to infrastructure talking to vehicles, there's a lot of data that's will be transmitted here. And as we're all aware, we hear the term of cybersecurity and all this and that. Well, we are looking at being able to protect that data. There's always, you know, with the open transmission of data between, in this case, cars and infrastructure, there's the vulnerability of something being hacked there. So whether it's the infrastructure, whether it's the vehicles themselves, it's something that we have to be concerned about.
Or it might just even be personal information.
Correct.
There's a value to some business to know where I go when.
Well, and you know, right now we buy a lot of that information. So everybody has their cell phones on and they're in their cars. So that's how basically we get a lot of our information as far as the trips in Ohio, where the traffic is, where the trucks are going. We buy that data off companies. And it's basically your cell phone data. So that exists today. It's just going to be a little bit more data that we would have with a connected autonomous vehicle.
And I should add that it is all anonymous. We're basically buying data from cell phone companies that tell us how fast is, for example, Jim's cell phone driving down the interstate. And it measures how fast a device on its network goes from point A to point B. Then we buy that data that shows what the speeds are on our interstate highway, and that's what you get in the OGO app. If you download the OGO app, which is a great tool, by the way, for knowing what traffic's like around the state, it will tell you what highway speeds are. So obviously, if Jim's phone stops going 65 and now it's only going 10, we get an alert that says, hey, all these cell phones are suddenly slowing down on the interstate. What's going on? And we can start turning cameras around and see what's going on. So that's really what we use that technology for.
So what are the challenges, Jim, in bringing all of these high-tech, modern transportation tools together with the guy like me who's not going to be doing it? I mean, you're never just going to flip a switch and everything's autonomous and connected. So what are the challenges of trying to bring the new in with the old?
Well, and that's it's a good point you raise. And again, you know, we still have a problem getting everybody to wear seatbelts, you know, so there is a public acceptance to this, and we understand that. I think the short-term goals for us is to deploy some of the technologies on what we call some pilot corridors here on US 33 in the central Ohio area, I-90 up along the lakefront, and parts around 270 with the goal of connecting East Liberty down to the intermodal facility and South Columbus. But I think the idea, you know, our short-term goals are is to deploy this, to demo a lot of this technology. We're going to test a lot of of what we've talked about here. So, you know, immediately, you know, deploy the fiber, the cellular backhauls on all the corridors. Then we will look at placing this technology in some of the state fleet that maintains these corridors, as well as the trooper cars that patrol these corridors, and even some of the what we call the freeway service patrols. Those are the guys out there that'll come and put up a work zone if there's an accident or something like that. And that'll be how we test the technology. One other thing, when we talk about the smart corridors, we wanted to mention the TRC, the Transportation Research Facility, just outside of the Honda manufacturing plant up there, is a large, one of the largest vehicle test facilities in the country. The state of Ohio, along with ODOT, will be investing $45 million into that facility, and Ohio State University, they actually run the facility, to actually add what we would call laboratory-type testing for the connected and automated vehicles. So they will serve as kind of the laboratory for the testing, while the open roads 33 and 90 and 270 will serve as the open road test beds, and the Ohio Turnpike as well. So we'll have that and this, and we will keep developing and keep demoing the technology, and also communicating these advancements to the general public. Like you said, there is a public acceptance component to it. I just don't think Joe truck driver, pickup truck driver, is gonna, you know, automatically embrace connected or autonomous vehicles. I just don't think he's going to do that. And it takes, you know, a couple decades to even turn the fleets over, as far as, you know, so people still having cars today that don't have that technology, they might not get that technology for 10, 15 years from now. So
Matt, we're going to continue on this discussion, but Matt, real quick, got 30 seconds here. ODOT have a website where we can learn more about some of these subjects?
Yeah, if you go to transportation.ohio.gov, just type in smart mobility in the search area, and that'll take you to a lot of information.
Matt Bruning, press secretary, Jim Barna, chief engineer, both with the Ohio Department of Transportation. We'll be back in a moment. Matter right, there's never going to be a need for a detour sign, because your car is going to take you the easiest way around all the traffic forever and ever more. Jim Barn is chief engineer with the Ohio Department of Transportation. Matt Bruning is that agency's press secretary, and we're talking smart mobility, the idea of how cars, trucks can operate fairly independent of driver controls, and then also what it's going to take infrastructure-wise to make this happen. Now, I would initially have thought, well, if I'd have talked about this 5 years ago, I said, well, this is going to happen 20 years from now. It's happening now. You've got three test projects, areas, Matt, that if not up and running, close to being so.
Absolutely, yeah. US 33 is our smart mobility corridor. It runs from Columbus all the way through Dublin, Marysville, all the way up to East Liberty, to the Transportation Research Center, which is right outside the Honda plants. And so that's a 35-mile stretch. We're also looking at a portion of I-270 from 33 around to Reckenbacher that will help connect those two facilities. And then up on I-90 in Lake County, where we've seen a lot of whiteout conditions during the winter months, where we get these big snow plumes that come in off Lake Erie with lake effect snow. So we wanted to test there, really, to kind of give us a chance to see how the infrastructure is working with those snow plumes that come in on Lake Erie. So it kind of gives us three different areas to test.
Jimmy told us a little bit earlier about some of the technology. Anything that we haven't talked about cool, that neat, that you're going to be testing in any of these projects?
Well, one thing I didn't mention before is smart signals. We have a deployment plan for 120-plus smart signals. And when we talk about smart signals, we talk about the controllers. That's the system that, you know, times it red to green, yellow. But this information, as we mentioned before, with some of the communication roadside units that we have, but the signal controllers actually will be able to send signals to these connected vehicles or autonomous vehicles to let them know when the signals will change. The signals may also adjust their timing in case you as a driver are in that dilemma zone where you're not going to be able to stop in time, or if you try to go through, you're going to run a red, but the signal will sense that and actually lengthen the green time so it doesn't put you in that situation. So that's the smart signal technology. We're looking at deploying, like I said, over 120 of these. Ultimately, the goal here, as this technology, as it evolves, as we get better with it, we will look at more and more corridors, more and more signal locations where we deploy this technology. The dynamic message boards you see on the freeway that tell you how much, you know, how much minutes it's going to take for you to go 7 more miles, you'll see much more deployment of that. Digital speed limit signs, not just a hard white and black placard metal sign, but looking at digital signs. Ultimately, what we want to do is be able to adjust those speeds based upon the conditions, whether it's congestion or inclement type weather.
Something just popped into my head. Will we ever see a time when the technology might be used to assist law enforcement? I'm driving down the highway and some guy is weaving in and out of cars and running up on bumpers and shooting off into the onto the shoulder. He's clearly intoxicated. Will the smart technology be able to see someone that's just doing really dumb stuff and bring an end to it in some fashion?
Yes, I honestly believe that, and I think that's sooner than later. You know, one issue we have sometimes is we get wrong way drivers. We still have an issue, and we never, it's so random about somebody getting on the freeway in the wrong direction. With this newer technology, alarms would go off in our traffic operations center for us to be made aware of this situation and us to be able to contact or even this information directly going to the, police vehicles and them being able to respond quickly. So that's what we would call, as we get all this technology, it would be real type traffic management. Right now we monitor traffic. So if there's an incident on the roadway, our cameras will catch it. We'll dispatch the necessary, first responders and everything else. But in the future, we want to be able to control that traffic and move it from point A to point B, as efficiently as possible.
So Matt, this, a lot of neat stuff here. It ain't cheap. How's ODOT funding this development and still keeping the potholes filled?
Absolutely. And you know, that's a challenge. I mean, you know, we have motor fuel tax is one of our biggest sources of revenue for the Ohio Department of Transportation. And this all comes at a time when people are driving more fuel-efficient cars, people are driving electric vehicles. And so that is kind of staying flat. So certainly we have to look at other ways to fund it. But, you know, at this point, the funding is relatively low. I mean, you know, it's about $15 million is what we're investing in 33.
But in the big picture.
But in the big picture, I think a lot of the investment will be on the automobile side, not so much the infrastructure side, but certainly there will be some investment we have to make on our end.
We'll be back in a moment.
Ohio Highway, you can make me steam. I'll just watch the birds fly south, cause they always find the way. Ohio Highway, Great Lakes.
Our studio guests, Jim Barna and Matt Bruning with the Ohio Department of Transportation, talking smart mobility, the driverless car, and all of the infrastructure that goes with it. I was asking Matt about how do you pay for filling in the potholes and turning us into the Jetsons. And you made a good point off mic there, Jim, that while we may see expenses going up in one area, you're going to save them in another.
You know, traditionally, to add capacity to a highway, we would have to add pavement. With all this technology, we can add just as much capacity, if not more capacity, without adding any additional pavement. So, you know, it may be like there is a cost to it, but for what we would spend on adding pavement to a highway is we can spend a lot less in adding technology that'll push as much throughput as an additional lane would.
So a new thing that ODOT's looking at is taking and making use of some already existing pavement that most of the time just sits there for when your car breaks down or you have a flat tire. We've got a lot of roadways in Ohio where the berm, the shoulder, is extremely wide. It looks to me like it's paved just the same as the traffic lanes. You're thinking about ways to put that to use, right, those lanes?
If you look at capacity, we really need a lot of capacity twice a day. That's in the morning rush and it's in the evening rush. Outside of that, most of the time the traffic is flowing at normal operating speeds. So during those times where we need the additional capacity, we have these shoulders. Here on 670 in Columbus, we have 14-foot inside shoulders that just sit there, and they're for refuge. If a car breaks down, it pulls off on the shoulder. Well, what we're looking at doing is actually running traffic on those shoulders during the morning and evening rush. That would give us a lot more capacity on the facility, move traffic a lot more quickly than what you do, and that we don't have to add more pavement to the facility. And then once, you know, we're out of the rush hours, we would shut the shoulders back down, and then you'd have your normal driving lane.
So, Matt, I drive 670 out of Columbus up to Westerville pretty regular. It's got one of those wide interior lanes that Jim just mentioned. I call it a bailout lane. It's, you know, cars jam on their brakes, you got a place to go. Don't you run some considerable risk if people who are just accustomed to having that non-used lane beside them all of a sudden has cars coming in it?
Certainly there's got to be some education that'll go with that, and that will happen. You know, but what you'll see on that infrastructure is large gantries over the highway every so often, and it'll be pretty frequent, that will show you which lane's open, which lane's closed, show you what the speed is, and we'll adjust the speeds down on those corridors when we open up that hard shoulder running, is what we call it. So those speed limits will actually come down to, say, 45 miles per hour. And the idea here is you want to harmonize the speed of traffic. You want to harmonize traffic, so everybody's trying to go the same speed. And then hopefully you don't have those start stops where someone has to hit the bailout lane, as you call it. They're all going the same speed. It reduces congestion and increases safety.
So going faster by going slower.
I know. It sounds really bizarre. But honestly, when we talk to people about this, they say, well, wait a minute. I still want to go 65 miles per hour. And I ask them, how often do you do that at rush hour anyway? And then they say, well, yeah, you're right.
About a quarter mile stretch.
Right, exactly.
Then I go 25, and then I go.
And that's the issue. So if we can get everybody going at a slower but steadier speed, then we move vehicles through. And this has been tried in Europe. It's been tried in Washington State and Minnesota, Wisconsin. Several states do this already, and it's been successful.
So here's an impossible question I'm going to ask you anyways. You're an engineer. You can figure this out, Jim. You've described how we're starting to test bits and pieces. I'm sure new technology we've not even thought about is going to come along. When is smart mobility the norm and not the horizon?
Well, you know, I think you alluded to this earlier. I didn't think this was going to come for another 10 years, and it's at our doorstep. There's many companies that are approaching the DOT about testing this technology right now. I do believe in the 2 to 5 years, you'll see an increased percentage of these vehicles, this technology, the infrastructure out there. If we're looking at 10 years down the road, you might be seeing 40 to 50% of the fleet. And then, you know, if it's 15 to 20 years, we may see much larger numbers or percentages of the fleet having this type of technology.
Should have planned to have you guys in for a couple of shows. Very interesting stuff. Thanks for being here. Jim Barna, Chief Engineer with the Ohio Department of Transportation. Matt Bruning, Press Secretary with ODOT, helping us take a look into the not very distant future of transportation in Ohio.
Town Hall Ohio is a project of the Ohio Farm Bureau Federation and is brought to you with the support of Nationwide. Nationwide is on your side. Join us again next week for Town Hall, Ohio.